Welcome to the Lookout Landing podcast. This is episode 9. I am Kate Prusser, managing editor of Lookout Landing, and I am joined, as always, by my stalwart companion, my close personal friend, someone who looks like he is a member of a boy band comprised entirely of lumberjacks, John Troopin. John.
Howdy, Kate. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Been better, but, you know, I have a lot of faith that this team is going to pick it up, and luckily I did not have to do anything baseball-related all day, and played some tennis with fellow staff writer Zach Gottschalk, who had to sit and man the LL account all of last night, so relatively.
Yeah, sorry about that, Zach.
I think he enjoyed firing it off, though. So I'm doing all right.
Well, hopefully things will improve a little because we are joined tonight also by LL's own personal beam of sunshine, delightful, lighthearted icon of jocularity, Zach Sanders. Hello, Zach.
I just want to point out that when you say joined as always by Mr. Troopin, this podcast has been going for, what, all of, like, 3 months, and when last time I did it, he wasn't here?
Hey, I...
Joined us sometimes.
We're trying to establish a thing, okay? Just pipe down and be glad that you're here.
I'm contractually obligated to be here.
It is true. We have you down, and since you will do none of the in-person appearances, this is as close as we can get.
Yep.
It is strange that when Kate took over, she did make all of us sign something in blood, but I guess that is how it works in the business, right?
I just find that blood sends a real message about, you know, what I expect from my staff members.
Utter, unquestioned devotion.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Zach, how are you this evening?
How about you?
I am well. I am, concerned about the direction of the team, as I imagine many of our listeners are. This has been a really tough start to the season, to the point where, I mean, I've only been regularly watching Mariners baseball since I moved back, so only a few years here, and I mean, this is the worst I can remember, but I'm wondering if those of you with, like, slightly longer memories remember anything worse than this?
Yeah, it was about this bad in the earlier part of this decade. It's when we were going through those record doldrums of hitting. You're like, oh, there's no chance they're better than this.
Yeah, the difference, I think, is the expectations, right? Because, like, those early 2010, I mean, after 2010, where, you know, people had hopes, it sort of seemed like everyone kind of was pretty down on it. This year, where I think reasonably enough, people have had hope and continue to have hope, but, and, you know, maybe we will have largely forgotten about this in a few weeks because they'll have gone on a run as they did last year, but it really is a smack in the face to just start out like this, and I don't really, you know, I don't remember the early, you know, the mid-2000s all that well, other than, you know, I remember watching lineups where Jose Lopez was the three hitter, but, you know, it felt like the expectations were a bit different. So far it's been very frustrating.
So we had a move today to kind of maybe start helping right the ship, or I don't know, satisfy a very frustrated fan base. I'm not totally sure about this, but so anyway, we have Casey Fien being outrighted, probably right going to accept his assignment to Tacoma. Is that what we were assuming?
Yeah,
seems likely.
No one's going to come rushing after Casey Fien on waivers.
Probably not.
Okay. But in his place, we have Evan Marshall being called up. So with Segura being on the 10-day DL, we're seeing a lot of Taylor Motter at shortstop. I know a lot of people thought maybe... I think there are two big questions to ask here. And one is kind of a converse. Is Casey Fien that bad slash? Is Evan Marshall really any better than him? And then the other question, so are we really rolling with this 8-man pen still? Why is this a thing? Why aren't we building some more bench depth? What are your thoughts on this?
Casey Fien is really interesting because prior to last year, he was always very, very good. And then last year, he was weirdly not good, but in a way that made you think and clearly made the Mariners think that he then would be good again. And then as we've seen, it's just not translated. Nothing's working for him.
When his whole, I mean, obviously he did a number of things well, but like one of his key skills was that he didn't walk people. Like whether his other stuff was on or not, he just was like extremely good at making people put the ball in play, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he seed the heck out of the Z.
Yeah. And whether one bad outing, you know, isn't necessarily mean he's completely had it, but it was pretty bad. Go on, Zach. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. And so, yeah, the move to send him down, or outright him in this case, makes sense generally, but not when the replacement is Evan Marshall. He may be a nice story, which I'm sure Kate would love to talk about. I'm going to focus on the actual baseball side. And that baseball side is he's not good at all. For having strong stuff, does nothing with it. He's in the majors. He had a good year a couple years ago, but since then he sits 93 to 95, and then the strikeout numbers are just low. He can't do anything with a big fastball. And if you can't do that, and you're not really a good command pitcher, I'm not sure what you're doing in the major leagues.
What I saw from his 2014, I mean, I just watched like a little bit of his debut, but it looked like his fastball had some really great run on it. It was fooling batters, a lot of swing and miss. What happened to that? That all of a sudden he looked, certainly the head injury affected him hugely when he, you know, was struck in the minor leagues, and then he had this long rehab process and then came back to baseball, wasn't very good, but you can kind of say, oh, okay, well, the head injury. But he also sort of was struggling before that. That's why he was in the minor leagues when he got hit in the head. I just have so many questions about this. Like, what happened to that really good stuff? Do the Mariners believe that that good stuff is in there still somehow, and they have like some pitcher whisperer thing to bring it out? He was such a recent acquisition and really hasn't pitched much into, I think he just had one inning in Tacoma, and they're calling him up already. I have so many questions.
I mean, DePoto said when they first acquired him, you know, this is one of his guys that he explicitly said, actually, this was a guy that he looked at in the draft when they first, or in his last draft that he was a part of in Arizona. And that, you know, he's a guy with a good, theoretically with a good sinker, gets a lot of ground balls, which he still does get a lot of ground balls. And to your point, Zach, what he did was in 2014, when he was successful, he got people to swing out of the zone. And for whatever reason, because he throws essentially a sinker and a slider, people stopped swinging out of the zone and started hitting everything that he threw in the zone. So whether that maybe can be figured out is possible. His velocity fell off a couple miles per hour last year and is picked up back up this spring, but there's not a lot to indicate recently that he has anything better than Casey Fien at the MLB level. And I think in general, this seems just like a stopgap move until Tony Zick is back.
He does do one thing better than Casey Fien, and that is to get the ground ball. And maybe that's something they are deliberately looking for. And if Evan Marsh...
After watching George Springer for a week.
And maybe if your bullpen needs a seventh guy who can come in and get a ground ball, then Evan Marshall is a decent guy to try to fill that role. But the guys who usually fill that role are have better command. That is the big difference. It's tough to consistently... Even when getting ground balls, it's tough to consistently not give up homers if you can't command the ball.
Right.
Especially in his case, when hitters learned that, I'm just going to let that ball fly out of the zone every time now and wait until he throws me a meatball. And that's what he's continually done.
Yeah. Well, and not that's... in 2014, but then you do see the home run numbers, the home run HR9 numbers really spike up from like 0.55 to 2, and then one, a little over one last year. So definitely... can be a little homer prone, which maybe again they feel like they can, like Safeco can contain that.
Hopefully, but the second part I think of the question is interesting as well, and sort of goes into the roster construction in general, which is that they're sticking with the 8-man bullpen, which I know Zach you are skeptical of at best. I'd get the idea if you're, you know, working with at least two starting pitchers who you have serious concerns about their ability to go deep in games, in Miranda and Gallardo. But realistically, you know, Kuma has never been a guy who's gone all that deep in games, and Felix has had as many, you know, all the struggles that he had last year. You know, there's no real spot where you're looking in this rotation and saying, oh yeah, that's a sure bet. But still, especially with now, you know, holes cropping up all over the roster, it's interesting that they're sticking with that orientation.
And the problem is that they're not even using the 8-man pen wisely.
Right.
When you're generally going to have a bigger 8-man pen, it means you have the ability to have more specialists. You can bring an extra loogie in to really cover up a hole there. Done that. We're using James Pazos against every and all good hitters in key situations instead of as a second lefty, which is realistically what his role should be in an 8-man pen if he's in the majors at all. And when you're going to waste roster spots, is it right? You can have an 8-man bullpen. It can theoretically work with roster construction. I would never recommend it. I would never want my team to do it. But then to then just completely waste that extra spot defeats the purpose. Bring up an outfielder, bring up a...
So who would you look for? Who would you, out of Tacoma, who would you want them to bring up and as a position player?
That's one of the issues, right? There's no one
sure
really sitting around there. The one that makes most sense, and he's not... and because that allows you to use calling out Vogelbach. He's the guy that then allows you to have extra flexibility without being anywhere near because it allows Valencia to move around. So you get that extra corner infielder, you get the extra corner outfielder at the same time. Then you add a pinch hitter bat that's actually worthwhile. That's where you can get real value. That's where I think we all saw this roster going.
Sure.
And why it's been the option. Ben Gamble's not the right guy. There's no infield that we're clamoring to bring up. We already have Mike Freeman starting at first base today. No one wants this.
Yeah. And pinch hitting last night. That was, well, I mean.
Hey, he worked a walk.
He did do that.
He worked an important walk. Which, honestly, is one of the advantages. So this is why I'm pro the 8-man pen, just because I think that I do think it should be utilized better. I wonder if maybe they've just gotten into game situations where they are trying to be strategic and it's gotten away from them. I know we had a lot of yelling about Chase DeYoung coming in to finish that extra innings game out, but like, I mean, there was literally no one else. He had to. I mean, he was playing the matchups. He's been trying to do stuff like that. When Fien and Diaz collapsed the other day, you know, why didn't he use Altavilla more? Well, I think that there's a real argument that he's trying to use Altavilla in that high leverage fireman kind of role. And yeah, you can stretch him out, but also you have a huge lead. Like, who expects that Casey Fien is, and Diaz are just going to totally implode?
Yeah.
But there's really, so Vogelbach has been struggling, which is not something I would have anticipated. I think it's just because Tacoma missed those first two games. They're missing another game tonight with rain out. Those guys are not getting chances to really fall into any kind of a rhythm. So they're all kind of honestly, they all look pretty rough. Tyler O'Neill doesn't look rough, but we know there's no way that they're going to bring him up. And honestly, Tyler O'Neill looks pretty rough and raw in the outfield. I think Tacoma plays a little differently than Jackson, Tennessee. So he's adjusting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like none of them are quite ready, I don't think. And I don't think DePoto is willing to bring up anyone who's not Freeman is cannon fodder. You know, Zach Schenk would be cannon fodder. Like, they don't care about the development of those guys because they're organizational filler, or that's how they perceive them. Someone like Vogelbach or O'Neill or Gamble, like, they don't want to bring those guys up and have them struggle. They don't want to Zunino them, right?
Yeah, and that is a good point, and it does make sense. Like, obviously you don't want to sort of cut the legs off of the development of guys who are struggling and who definitely need the time. I think Vogelbach is sort of the guy where it's like, he shouldn't need the time at this point. And you know, that doesn't mean, you know, and recognizing that he does, I guess, is a good thing to recognize. It just puts this team, the way that it has been constructed, in a really tight spot where you're trying to buy time for development for guys where the best players on this team are theoretically their best right now, and those guys being a little bit better for maybe next year or, you know, a couple of years from now might not mean as much as if they can perform right now. And so I get that impatience, and it's tough because there's just not another option in there. So
I was really interested when I was watching Tacoma batting practice, seeing Gamble take reps at first base. I don't know if they would do that because it would be like kind of a kick in the shins to Vogelbach. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if maybe he's, but see, it all comes back to the time. Like, none of them have had any chance to really establish that, like, yes, we can come up and be major league regulars. And I think the play of Taylor Motter has honestly made a lot of this irrelevant. Like, I didn't expect, and I don't expect the performance that Taylor Motter had last night to be a regular thing at all. But I think when you have him and he is really being able to do some positive things for you, that he can hold down that spot as long as he can remain healthy. He can hold down that spot. Maybe once in a while we have to pinch hit Mike Freeman. I'm still baffled by that, but you know, do we need that extra spot if our bench player is already able to play well above replacement?
I guess I don't expect Freeman to be anything more than replacement, and it would be pretty awesome if he was replacement.
Oh, no, I was talking about Motter. Motter playing well above replacement.
Yes, yeah.
Motter
yeah.
is the bench piece.
Yeah. I think from what we've seen from Motter, you know, he's a better than average, you know, or at least he's a solid backup. I believe Zip's projections had him as like a one-win player, and which is like, you know, that's a fine backup. I guess it all sort of ties into the sort of discussion that we wanted to have Zach talk about, which is, you know, we see that this team still has talent. This team still has holes. This team has, you know, it is early in the season, quote unquote, but they've also, even if they play to their supposed true talent, and you think that true talent is a playoff level team, even if you do that, which I know, especially once Smiley was hurt, there's a lot fewer people feel that way. Have they dug themselves too much of a hole? And what do you think their next step is, if so?
Realistically, the answer is yes. They have dug the hole too deep. But that also, your view of the team in the preseason and how high you thought both on the floor were. Yes.
The ceiling on the floor, you said? Yeah.
If you thought this was about an 85-win team, which with Smiley is realistic, then you do have a little bit of wiggle room, but not to this extent even.
Right.
If you thought this was, as some projections said, when Smiley got hurt, like an 81, 82-win team, you've dug the hole already. If you play true talent from here on out, you're not making the playoffs. And the best way to illustrate that is to see, so with that 82-win expectation, they had about a 1-in-3 chance of making the playoffs was the odds. And before today's game starts, that is down to 15%. Essentially cutting our odds in half within the first 9 games.
Yeah. It's rough.
And it's
brutal.
It's brutal because it's the start of the season. And so no one wants to say 9 games in, well, this is over. This was fun.
Right.
But you have to
Except
be real.
It wasn't.
Yeah. But you have to be realistic that it's going to take a extremely notable hot streak for this team to come back and compete for the playoffs. And you can't realistically expect that to happen.
Yeah.
But here are some things that make me feel better. Thinking about it being early in the season, do we believe that the Arizona Diamondbacks are the best team in baseball with their 7.78 winning percentage? Are the Diamondbacks the best team in baseball? Well, I click on their little thing and they say, who's the pitcher? Miller is effectively wild effectively wild is always like a huge red flag for me. You know, do we believe that the Padres are a better team than the Giants? Do we believe the Cardinals are the worst team and the Reds are the best team in the Central? I mean, there's so many just kind of upside down, honky wonky things going on here in these standings.
Right, but you don't have to believe the Mariners are a true 2-7 team for it to be the fact that we're now realistically expected to win 2 or 3 less games than we were previously on the whole. Even if you say this is an aberration, we think this is realistically still an 85-win team, you've already dropped your expectation down for the season total.
Because you're not starting from zero.
Because you're not starting from zero anymore. Yeah. So whether or not you believe that all those things are true or not is realistically irrelevant. It's happened, and that's great. But what do we expect to happen going forward?
Yeah. Well, and I guess to that point, the thing that makes me, you know, not necessarily optimistic, but just contextually intrigued, I guess, is that Toronto and Texas both have started off so poorly as well.
Yeah.
And you know, that may not matter all that much. And
Texas,
you know,
has had some crap luck. I mean, I think that you can't look at the Mariners and say that they haven't had some real crap luck. Like, The Smiley injury is crap luck. The Segura injury is crap luck. Like, these are really devastating pieces of luck to have occurred early on.
Yeah. And I think, like, Smiley's injury didn't astonish me, just in that he's a guy who was pitching with a torn labrum, or was it? Some like, major injury that he just decided to not get surgery on, and, you know, I find those sort of choices fascinating, but always horrifying when people decide that they're just going to try and rehab through essentially a full tear.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I think, as you said, Zach, like, whether or not this team has been unlucky, the fact is that this is what their record is, and if they're going to make a, you know, to be a competitive team still, they have to not only be what we thought they could be, but exceed that, and that is a lot to ask, especially without Smiley and with Segura missing a few more games still. You know, and obviously it's encouraging that the pitching staff has looked good. It's encouraging that sort of the defense has looked pretty solid, but, you know, plays like that Haniger fly ball last night, where it was like, you know, yeah, that is an 18% catch percentage, but at the same time, like, if your team is built around those types of plays being made, then, you know, you're sacrificing elsewhere to have a better chance of making those plays, and sometimes you're not going to make them, but you need to make them more often than not to for your model to succeed, I guess.
And does Mitch Haniger maybe make that catch when he's played more than one game in Safeco Field, too?
I think it's probably he'll get more comfortable. I think it's, you know, it was a long run. They were shifted way to left field, and it was unfortunate that Gattis just stuck his bat out and hit a blooper.
My God.
But it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate that they hit a, you know, single off of home plate and straight up into the air. So, there will be breaks that go the Mariners' way, and if there aren't, then they're not going to compete, and that's okay. But it would be disappointing, and so, you know, this team, I think, as Zach said, they've dug themselves a hole, and they've been put, and people have kicked some dirt on top of them while they've been digging, and they can get themselves out of it, but it will take sort of much more. It will take an exceptional effort, I guess. Would you say that's fair?
I would say that's definitely fair. It will take a hot streak. I maintain that I believe that the team is capable of it. I'm sitting here looking at these run differentials, like the Astros sitting in second place in our division with a run differential of -7. I mean, it helps me to look at these numbers and kind of realize that even though everything looks bad, just looking at the Mariners in a vacuum, and even though I recognize that there's been a hit to the playoff chances, math is fluky, baseball is fluky, and things happen. So, who knows?
Zach, do you have another sort of final thought on the whole before we take a little break and get to some questions?
I think it's just key to remember that, yes, it's a long season, so let's not try to get too freaked out yet, while also just being realistic. We have to. That's tough
for
to
sure.
Do in a positive light at this point.
Absolutely, I would agree.
It's very hard to be positive about the team right now, and it's hard because if you are positive about the team, somebody will come along with a very reasonable argument about why you should not be positive about the team, and you know, spend a little time in the LL Twitter mentions sometimes, because it is just a garbage heap in there. But I think that you have a choice, and you can choose pain and suffering and same old Mariners, or you can choose to be on the side of, well, there's a lot of season left to play, and yeah, maybe playoffs are out of reach, and maybe you resign yourself to that early on, which is in a way kind of a gift. So now you're just watch some hopefully good baseball.
The gift of lowered expectations.
The gift of
it keeps on giving.
All right, well, we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we will answer some of your Twitter questions.
Mr. Big dreams from the city of the lean, hoping that I don't fall out. This is for the times watching MTV Cribs and getting depressed over. Always told me money was nothing to stress over. But what makes that phrase so funny? Bet the person who made it had money.
And we're back. Now is the time of the show where we take your Twitter questions. John, what have we got?
We have a few questions here this evening. Appreciate people asking and coming up with some creative things in spite of the quality of baseball we've had so far.
Truly appreciated.
Indeed. And in some real positive spirit, our first question comes from Neil Posner at NJ Posner. What section offers the best value at Safeco, and where do you like to watch the game from the most?
Well, I'll take this one because Zach doesn't go to games.
I'm actually very curious then to hear what Zach's favorite spot is.
Since he doesn't go.
Since it's such a rare occasion, what do you dine on when you only have it has to be caviar if you're only venturing out so rarely.
Zach gets a suite, but only for himself.
Last year I sat down not directly behind home plate, but pretty close, the section above the diamonds where you can actually buy the tickets and not just be like a season ticket holder. That was okay.
Sure. Was that
So you like to sit where the scouts would sit if it was a minor league game?
Well, so when I go to minor league games, that's where I sit. If I go to minor league game, I sit right there.
Understandable. Where did you have tickets on the one day that like the entirety of LL was there and we actually met you in your human form?
I think I just bought a random ticket as high up as I could find because we weren't going to be sitting there.
Okay.
If I had to pick and I need to stay conscious of cost, I'd sit essentially right behind home plate, but up in the third deck. I don't like sitting low. Like, the low in the right field is in theory nice because it's relatively cheap. But also you're just a nothing. You're close to the right fielder. Like, and maybe, you know, in John's case, he gets to stare at Machaniger.
Yeah, John, I was just going to say.
I mean,
but no. Most of us don't need to do that. Don't sit in the bleachers.
Most of y'all don't sit in the left field bleachers.
I like the center field bleachers.
Center field's fine.
What's wrong with left field?
I sat there one time, and probably like 12, 15 years ago. And it happened that game, Stan Javier, a couple of catches to save runs at the wall, and you can't see that from the bleachers. He's right underneath you.
Right.
Was this the fabled Padres catch on Phil Nevin?
I don't remember who we were playing. But yeah, that kind of ruined me on it. Like, yeah, I could have just seen two great plays that now I
Any seat where you can't see the entirety of the field of play, I think is, no matter, like, even if you're really close, it's kind of a bummer there.
I mean, if Aoki was still our left fielder, I would not have a problem sitting in those left field bleachers because there's nothing going on down there I need to see.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I agree. I don't like the obstructed view. And actually, it's something, the center field bleachers, even though I like them, you can't see the video board. And I really do. I like to be in I like to be close enough to a TV that I can see, like, the root broadcast. If I'm not sitting anywhere that's, you know, super up close to the action, I do. So I don't have to sit on at-bat the whole time. And I know if I have a case to yell at the umpire or not. I like to go on like a random Tuesday and wait until, which I can do because I live in the city, so I recognize like the privilege of this and being able to wait right beforehand. But man, once you've tasted Terrace Club, it's really hard to go back.
Which one's the Terrace Club?
The Madden Crowds and the Hoi Polloi. And, you know.
Yeah,
that's
I've been
level,
there.
Right
I, like
under
that.
The suites.
I like that.
Is that like the same as club level?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the seats are kind of squishy and the bathrooms are clean and the lines are shorter and
get your own
it's just yeah. I talked my parents into Terrace Club seats for Edgar's retirement ceremony because I want to be able to have like sometimes you have to be able to build a little space for yourself into the ballpark and that's a good way to do it. But also sure. If you stand on the railing by the Hit It Here Cafe on a not busy night or on the next one up, the third deck level, you're not really close to anything, but you can really see the whole field. You can see the video board and you can just kind of hang on the rail. And it's a totally fine place to watch.
I think I would agree with Zach just in my experience that the third level behind home plate, generally you can get something in the $12 to $20 region, depending on who they're playing. And you can see the whole field, you can see the video board, you can see out into the, you know, out into the city pretty well. I really like being right behind home plate because I can at least have one dimension of regulation on if a ball is a strike or not.
Right.
And it also lets me sort of see the pitcher's motion really well, so I can sort of have a little bit better sense of what's happening and you know, if they're falling off or if they've got some mechanical issues. But
oh yeah, for anyone listening, you should totally, if you want to learn about pitching mechanics, buy John a ticket to the ball game and go with John. No, I'm serious. Remember, John and I watched when I first met him. We watched an Edwin Diaz start, and he or not an Edwin Diaz start. Edwin Diaz was closing out the game, and he was struggling. And John was able to explain to me exactly why he was struggling and, like, get me to watch his mechanics. So, the offer is out there because John is a poor 20-something. You buy him a ticket, you go to the game with him, you will learn so, so much about pitching mechanics.
Remember that guy in, like, the early 2000s or the mid-2000s who was saying, like, he alone could fix Felix Hernandez's, like, motion, that if he was going to blow out his arm in, like, a year, so, but that if the Mariners offered him like $1 million, he would come and fix him for him. So, I'm gonna be the guy to fix. Do you don't remember this?
Kyle Body?
There may have been a little bit of Droive, a little bit of Loin. I don't remember the exact name. I'll have to look that up. It was a distinct thing, but anyway, I'm happy to offer my completely unqualified services in there. All right, next question, also from Neil here. For many years, I hated the Athletics the most. What team do you currently hate the most? And if it's not the Astros, why not?
It's the Angels. I hate the Angels the most. I hate Yunel Escobar. I hate him. I've never forgiven him for his eye black, gay slur, and then pretending like it was just a thing. I hate his Instagram account. I loathe him personally as a baseball player. So seeing him turn into freaking Mike Trout against us was incredibly frustrating. And then Andrelton Simmons all of a sudden looking like fucking Francisco Lindor. I said we could curse, and I saved my curse for where I really feel strongly about it, and that's Francisco Lindor, or Andrelton Simmons suddenly looking like Francisco Lindor, because fuck that noise. So yeah, currently I hate the Angels.
I love all people and all things.
Zach?
Oh, please.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Scott George just walked in the door.
Everyone should have an opinion.
The Angels probably are mine in the division. And mostly just because of Socha's stupid face.
It is an unpleasant peach.
I don't know why. I really just don't like the Marlins. probably because of ownership.
Interesting.
And I just hate everything about that franchise as a whole, and so I can't bring my.
You hate the home run sculpture? Ugly.
Oh, it's bad.
I like
it. Did you see the cat that was crawling up
yes!
on it yesterday?
Home run cat. But
see, that's already a blatant ripoff.
DJ King.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's ownership. Yeah. I think if they sell the team, which they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
To Jeb Bush.
If someone claps for him,
yeah.
that home run sculpture is, you know,
perfect.
Pretty high energy.
All right.
Oh, fuck. I think the Rangers are my least favorite team. I grew up hating them the most. Juan Gonzalez and Rafael Palmeiro ruined my dreams so many times and just were miserable to watch. I don't know. Somehow I watched an inordinate number of Rangers games where they homered off of seemingly every pitcher. And when A-Rod went there, even worse. And I've sort of... My perspectives on A-Rod have evolved since I was younger, but my perspectives on the Rangers have not. So even though they have a lot of players that individually I enjoy, it'll be pretty difficult for any team to match how much I hate them. And they're just disgusting stadium where Felix always sucks. So
you won't have to worry about that stadium for too much longer, though.
Indeed, thank goodness. And nor will the taxpayers of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So, our next question here comes from Chris at C from Bothell. Over under on when we are sick of toasted grasshopper references.
I'm already sick of it.
By June 1st.
I'm already sick of it, so under. I mean, I might be in the minority here, but...
Maybe it's just because I don't watch as many games as you that I'm not quite there yet. but I think once I start getting into the habit of the Mariners are a nightly occasion for me, then yeah, I don't need to hear
it. I was going to say, I don't know why I didn't realize this at the time, but... Like, there was that game yesterday was doomed from the start because the moment I left my house to go watch the game at a bar at Trivia with you, Kate, I closed my laptop as Jay Buhner came on the screen in the booth with Grasshopper with a big old grin on his face. And I knew I should have known then that the game was over. So I'm sick of them purely because of their affiliation with a player I loved watching growing up, and an announcer I cannot stand to listen to.
Fair enough.
Next question comes from fellow staff writer Isabel Manassian at 95 Coffee Spoons on Twitter. Where is the best ice cream in the Seattle area?
I don't eat a lot of ice cream because my teeth are poor, but I've never had Molly Moon, so I can't speak on that. I did like the Fainting Goat in Wallingford. Mm-hmm. But really, I get down with Full Tilt. There's one right here in White Center near me, and it's so good and, like, always kind of groovy in there. And I like playing whack-a-mole. I have, like, a big waffle cone. So that's what I dig.
So I went to Fainting Goat a few days ago for the first time. It was extremely good. I would have to say my favorite ice cream or ice cream affiliated place is Old School Frozen Custard on Capitol Hill. They have like a narrow rotating series of ice cream or custard flavors. They have fantastic sundaes. They have milkshakes. They do everything extremely well. But if you're going for just like a full experience, then there's a spot on Capitol Hill that does ice cream sandwiches with Molly Moon's ice cream.
I have been there over on and like 19th, right?
Yes, and I'm blanking on the name of it. and it is a favorite place if you are a general. Hello Robin, that's
Hello Robin, that's it.
Yes, it's on 19th exactly, and I've gone there a few times, and I think I've gone there 5 times, and 2 of the 5 times I've seen Russell Wilson and Sierra. So if you're a general fan of Seattle sports and want to see them, go there in sort of August when their NFL is having their preseason practices, because apparently that's a good post-practice snack.
All right, good. Zach,
I can't imagine he's going to be there anymore now that he moved to the East Side. He's an East Sider now. He can't.
I think did he just move there recently? Because I think he would come, because he would come in a very nice sports car and zoom off like he had somewhere else to be immediately. So I wonder, it feels like
yes,
they were explicitly coming there for that.
Actually, just like, I don't know, I need to go over there and just punch him in his stupid face.
Okay.
What to what end? Just because he's what has he done?
Stupid robot thing, and the he comes off as this person that's awesome, and then you read a little bit, and then you realize, oh, this guy's kind of a jackass, and everyone still loves him just because no one knows he's a jackass, and he's also just an idiot. I don't think he's a smart person.
That's fair. He loves nanobubbles, but
Jesus.
He also loves helping. Yeah, he loves nanobubbles, Jesus, and helping children. And
one of those three things I can get down with.
I have no strong feelings on one. I am pretty in support of one, and nanobubbles can get the hell out of here, but whatever. Anyways, is there a nanobubble themed ice cream place that you like, Zach? On the East Side. Is it Cold Stone Creamery, since they don't have any in
Zach,
Seattle?
Zach, do you not eat ice cream because that's time that takes away from you enjoying boxed wine?
See, now
wine.
I'm curious about like a boxed wine sundae?
A boxed wine ice cream?
I was going to say, there's probably like a sherbet.
Like,
or,
you know,
or
root beer float's a thing. Is
right?
A boxed
like,
wine float a thing? Because... That's interesting.
You can make it.
Right. A smoothie out of it? I've done
we'll
a smoothie with
that,
vodka,
Zach.
But never with boxed wine.
A wine. We'll work on it, Zach. Maybe that'll finally get you out, too. I used to have a port shake, actually, at Dilettante, when that was still on Broadway, Dilettante Chocolates. Dilettante
There's,
Chocolate
it's still
and
there.
Port. Oh,
it's
really?
Still there.
Oh, my
oh,
God.
Yeah.
I was
oh,
going to
yeah.
see if they still have the port shake, because, wow, that was just the best.
All right, I've just found cherry-topped ice cream sundae with red wine. A fruity Grenache works best. You want pint of vanilla ice cream, bottle of red wine, sparkling water, and a jar of maraschino cherries. And I think we can make this happen for you, Zach.
All right, we'll do it, and then maybe we can finally get Zach to... come out of his house and
we'll
hang out
we'll
us.
Make one and we'll just sort of hold it up like a boom box.
Oh, I was gonna say more like it was like the bat symbol. Just hold it up outside and
the Zach symbol.
Absolutely. Alright. Last couple questions here. Henry at the boy Henry J. What can I do to avoid the feeling of dread that washes over me as first pitch approaches?
See previous answer about
yeah.
wine shakes. Duh.
Yeah, honestly, that's oof. I got a hankering now. Oh, man. Yeah, not a lot to do for you, but
yeah, no, sorry. I hope you're of legal drinking age because that's
yeah. I would say if you want, I focus on something specific that you want that you're curious about in each game. I guess
yes.
is what I'd say. So if you want to say like I'm gonna look at. You know how Taylor Motter does today, and not necessarily focus on the team's results as a whole. Focus on individual things. Focus on how people's swings look. Focus on, you know, how you know defenders getting good first steps. You know, you can look at little things that you can say, okay, they did this well. Okay, they need to work on this, and hopefully that can be a little bit give you a small little bit of removal from the potential. concern. It can give you something to be excited about.
Find one tiny real corner easy solution to panic here. About yeah. instead of panicking about everything.
Zach, you said you had an easy solution.
He likes to overlook it. Just don't watch the game. You know, if the games don't make you happy, you know, don't do it.
Don't watch. Yeah,
that is an absolutely fantastic point.
We only have so much time, and if it doesn't make you happy...
And here's the thing, right? Yeah. You don't watch the game, you want to know what happened? Come to lookoutlanding.com, and you read the recap.
Oh, what a good company man you are.
Absolutely.
But don't do that. Don't read the recap. That'll make you sad. Don't do that, too.
Look at the game thread, or look at the chart. There'll be some fun off, you know, sort of topics to discuss. All right, our last question comes from Shane Skladany, at Shane Skladany on Twitter. Possibly. Could be Skladany. We'll see. Who is a good candidate to be traded at the deadline if we continue to suck?
Valencia, Gallardo, Ruiz, Dyson.
All of those guys would have to be performing, though. Like, I mean, Dyson. I would agree with Dyson. I don't think Cruz is going anywhere. I mean, he's obviously represents some pretty sweet trade potential, but because he's going to hit his home runs, even if he's not having a great year. But I don't think that they do that. I think you're right, like, looking at the guys who are just here on kind of one-year deals. But I think the only one who might be appealing is Dyson, and I don't
Sishik
know
will get
he
you
would
something.
Fetch.
If he comes back healthy.
Yeah.
If he's decent, yeah. Why do you say Sishik? It's Sishik. Sishik?
Yeah.
It's
Sishik. There's not an S, an E,
like
or an
Sishak.
A in the front of that name.
I don't know. Take it up with the Portuguese.
Is there a slur I can call them? I don't know any Portuguese slurs.
Oh, no.
Undoubtedly.
Let's not do that.
And we're not going I'm not going to look that up for you. Do you think Iwakuma has if he's performing sort of on pace with where he was last year? Cuz I mean essentially if he's on performing around where he was last year, like that's like a Jason Hamill kind of, you know, person that you could trade for, and if, you know, at around the deadline someone's down a pitcher, I feel like, because he's got a vesting option for next year, but not necessarily, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean much for the, I mean, it could, I guess, mean something for the Mariners, but if the team's really in trouble, he could be someone that you could get something for.
I don't know who wants that vesting option.
Yeah.
It's fair.
I mean, looking at what they did before, I mean, maybe Miranda? I don't know how invested they are in Miranda. If he's decent, if he kind of looks like he... If he's in the pen by then, which I kind of hope he will be. Although, who knows? I would also totally not be surprised by Drew Smyly's elbow just blowing up and him missing the whole year at this point. That's like a secret sneaking feeling that I have. But yeah, if Miranda's pitching out of the pen and that stuff is playing up at like 95, whatever, he can hit even higher than that. I could see them shopping him because I don't know how invested they are in him as a starting pitcher or even as a long reliever. And he could be valuable. If they dangle Altavilla, I will kick things.
DJ Peterson also. I still mystify that he's on the team or in the organization generally. Not because he is not worth having, but simply because I don't know how...
I mean, there's no place for him.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think he's had a little bit of value still, and it would be surprising to me if he was in the organization at the end of the
season. I'm surprised they didn't move him this offseason, honestly. I mean, maybe just because of the injury that took him out of any kind of real meaningful trade talks, and they didn't like what they thought they could get. But if he tears up AAA, which I think he has a good shot of doing...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're sold on him, for better or for worse, and I think it's mostly for worse. Jerry really seems to get stuck on his guys.
It is a potentially unfortunate...
myopic sort of way of looking at things.
Blinders on.
So, basically, anyone who is not named Robinson Cano, Kyle Seager, probably Nelson Cruz or Felix Hernandez, and or James Paxton. And I think everybody else is kind of in play. Oh, or Segura. They won't trade Segura. And Haniger. They love Haniger. And I literally think anyone else is up in the air.
I just watched Taylor Motter make a Willie Mays basket catch on a George Springer pop-up, so I'm pretty sure he's untradeable at this point as well.
Yeah, well, those of us who are going to watch the game should go watch the game. And
mm-hmm. Any final thoughts for you, Zach, or for the people?
Yeah, what last little... You've been in this game longer than probably any of us, having been writing about baseball on the internet since you were butt knee-high to a toasted grasshopper. So there's one down.
That was the last, yeah.
So, what like words of wisdom do you have for us?
To burn it down.
Prepare to burn it down. Excellent.
Fire, hellfire.
Fire, hellfire. Okay. Indeed.
All right. Well, that's the podcast for the week. Thank you very much to Zach Sanders for coming on and enlightening us. Thank you very much, the listener. We could not do this without you. And thank you to all of you who sent in questions. And we will see you next week.